ship. He sounded weak, but Fuchs seemed satisfied to have him on duty again. After nearly 3 hours, Bahadur called in. In English, he reported, "The heat exchanger is back online, Captain." The man looked happy. Grimy, his bald head glistening with perspiration and rivulets of sweat trickling into his beard, but a big toothy grin spreading almost from one dangling gold earring to the other. I had seen that kind of expression on people's faces before. It was the exhausted yet triumphant smile of an athlete who had just broken a world record. I looked from his image to the graph. The white cursor was blinking on the edge of the red zone. Fuchs gave no congratulations.
"How long will it stay online?"
"Indefinitely, Captain. For as long as we need it."
"Really?"
"If we step up the maintenance routine," Bahadur amended. "Inspect and clean one tube at a time, every 24 hours, sir." Rubbing a hand across his broad jaw, Fuchs replied, "Yes, I think that's in order." He pointed at me.
"Get me the pump station, Humphreys."
"Yes, sir," I said. Baldan Sanja was back there, sitting grimly in front of a maze of dials. His face was dry, his eyes wide, pupils dilated. I wondered what medication Marguerite had given him.
"Sanja," said Fuchs, "we're going down again. The emergency is over. Report to sick bay."
"I will monitor the pumps, Captain," he said doggedly.
"Report to the sick bay. Don't make me repeat my order again."
The man's eyes went still wider. "Yes, Captain, I will go." It took a while for the bridge to cool down to a relatively comfortable level. Fuchs called off the emergency, but by then it was time for my normal watch, so I stayed at the comm console. Fuchs gave me a 10-minute break to get something to eat and relieve myself. I was back on duty in 9 minutes and 30 seconds.
"Have you ever heard of Murphy's Law, Humphreys?" he asked from his command chair.
"If anything can go wrong, it will," I replied, then hastily added, "Sir."
"Do you know the reason behind Murphy's Law?"
"The reason behind it, sir?" He gave me a disdainful huff.
"You think of yourself as something of a scientist, don't you? Then you ought to be interested in the reasons behind phenomena, root causes."
"Yes, sir," I said.
"Why does the air conditioning system break down during the hottest weather of the year? Why did our heat exchanger fail when we needed it most?"
I saw where he was heading. "Because that's when the maximum strain is put on it."
"Exactly," he said, leaning back in his chair. "Now tell me, what else is going to fail? Where will Murphy strike next?"
I had to think about that. We needed the heat exchanger to keep us from cooking to death as we descended deeper into Venus's atmosphere. We also needed the life support systems, but no more so now than we did the day the crew came aboard back in Earth orbit.
"Well?"
Fuchs goaded. "The pumps," I guessed. "The pumps keep the gas envelope filled with outside air, so we keep descending."
"And stay in trim," he added.
"And when we're ready to go up again," I reasoned aloud, "we'll be dependent on the pumps to drive the air out of the envelope and lighten us."
"Very good, Humphreys," Fuchs applauded mockingly. "Very astute. As soon as you end your watch, I want you to go to Sanja and start learning how to run the pumps."
"Me?"
"You, Mr. Humphreys. Your talents are wasted here at the communications console. That's much too simple a task for a man of your brilliance."
He was jabbing at me. Why, I had no idea. The two other technicians on the bridge were as blank-faced as usual, although I thought I saw their eyes meet briefly.
"Yes, Humphreys," Fuchs went on. "It's time you got those lily-white hands of yours dirtied a little. A bit of honest work will make a man of you, mark my words."
I definitely saw the glimmerings of a smile on the navigation technician's lips before she could mask it. I was the butt of Fuchs's scornful humor. But why? Fuchs left the bridge shortly afterward, and Amar Jagal, the first mate, took the con. She gave me a sour look but said nothing. When I finished my watch, I left the bridge, intending to find Baldan Sanja and start learning about the pumps.
but I only got as far as the open door to the captain's quarters. "Take a look at this, Humphreys," he called to me. That was an order, not a request, I knew. I stepped through the doorway and saw that his big wall screen showed the ground below us, glowing hot in the darkness of the Venusian night. "Like Milton's Lake of Fire," he said, staring grimly at the bleak, barren rock. He touched a control on his desk and the overhead lights went out. There was no illumination in his compartment except the eerie, hellish glow from those red-hot rocks more than 30 kilometers below us. Their fiery light made his face look evil, satanic, and yet exultant. "A dungeon horrible," he quoted, "on all sides round, as one great furnace flamed, yet from those flames no light, but rather darkness visible." He turned to me, still smiling devilishly. "Have you ever seen anything like it?" I stared at him. "No, of course not," he answered his own question. "How could you? How could anyone? Look at it, just look at it. Terrible and magnificent, awesome and beautiful in its own ghastly way. This is what hell must have looked like before Lucifer and his fallen angels were condemned to it." I was speechless, not so much with the view of the ground, but with Fuchs's obvious fascination. "A whole world to explore," he said, still staring at the screen. "An entire planet, so much like our own in size, yet so utterly, confoundedly different from Earth. How did it get this way? What made Earth into paradise, and Venus into hell?" Despite myself, I stepped closer to the screen. It truly was awesome, beckoning in a terrifying, grotesque way, like the old horror tales of vampires luring their prey to them. A vast plain of bare rock, glowering sullenly, so hot that it glowed. There's never darkness on Venus, I realized. Despite the clouds, it is never dark down there. That's where we were going. That's where we had to go. Down there, into that infernal red-hot hell. Alex was down there. What remained of him, at least. And Fuchs was fascinated by it, absolutely enthralled. He stared wordlessly at the searing, hot, rocky landscape below us, his lips pulled back in an expression that might have been a smile on any other human face. On him it looked more like a snarl, a look of defiance, the face of a man staring at his arch-enemy, his nemesis, a foe so powerful there is no hope of overcoming it. Yet he dared to face this enemy, face him and battle against him with all his might. How long we stood there staring at the blistering, scorched landscape, I can't tell. But at last Fuchs tore his gaze away and turned on the overhead lights. It took a real effort of will for me to turn away from the screen and look at him. For once Fuchs was silent. He dropped down into his desk chair, his face somber, thoughtful. "I could have been a scientist," he said, looking back at the scorched surface of Venus again. "My schooling wasn't so good, though. I never had the grades to make it into a university, or the encouragement. I went to a technical college instead. Got a job before I was 20. Earned my living instead of earning a PhD. I had no reply for him. There was nothing I could say. His eyes finally met mine. "Well, once I've got your father's money in my fist, then I can take all the schooling I want. I'll come back to Venus with a proper scientific mission. I'll explore this world the way it deserves to be explored." He's entranced by Venus, I finally understood. I pretend to be a planetary scientist, but he's truly enthralled by this horrible world. In a strange and bizarre way, he's in love with Venus. Yet this was the man who had casually set me up for the crew's suspicions, who had cruelly badgered me on the bridge less than half an hour earlier. "I don't understand you," I murmured. He cocked a brow at me. "Because I'm fascinated by this alien world? Me, a rock rat, an asteroid bum, excited by the mysteries and dangers we're facing? You think that Only certified scientists with proper degrees in their dossiers are allowed to become enraptured by the new and unknown.
Not that, I said.